read his bio in the program. Currently, he is the general counsel for the judiciary in the state of Missouri. And we are so lucky to have, I had never met him before, although he was famous among J. Reuben Clark members because he was the international chair. So he got his name on a lot of programs, but the glory did not equal the amount of work that went into that volunteer position. And from having dinner with him last night, I realized that his passion and commitment extend to all areas of his life, to his family, to his church, to his work, and to these other things that seem peripheral. But we are so lucky to have him here today. And so I would ask you to help me welcome him to this session.
Thank you. Thank you. My passion extends to ice cream as well. So I'm a big fan of ice cream. That's right. Okay. You see, my topic for today is building an A-team for religious freedom. I'm gonna launch into this with a little bit of a story from my own past and work as a lawyer. It was a few years ago that I worked for the Attorney General's office. I was the Deputy Solicitor General for the state of Missouri. And I was, in that capacity, asked or called upon to represent the state in a variety of different cases, many of which impacted religious freedom and have given rise to my not only my interest in religious freedom, my passion about religious freedom, but also especially about this concept of team building and working with others. So a few years ago, I had a case given to me that related to the Missouri Constitution's definition of marriage between man and a woman. And this provision of the Missouri Constitution was passed with about 72% or 70%, or probably approximately 72% of the electorate voting in favor of it, and was popular certainly at the time. The social mores changed, and by the time the lawsuits were brought against the state of Missouri by various organizations, that had dropped pretty dramatically. I was called upon to represent the state of Missouri in state court on this principle. And I can vividly remember going to court, and I didn't know who all would be there and what kind of support I would have. So I had a couple of friends who asked, hey, can we come along and watch? And I thought, yeah, I think that'd be great. And I'm glad they did, honestly, because it was me and that was it. The entire audience was filled with people who shared a completely different view and were arguing against the position I was arguing. And in fact, almost everybody in the courtroom, except for those two friends, were on the other side. And you could feel sort of the tangible, palpable sort of persona non grata in that courtroom that day. And right then and there, I knew, one, that this was important, that I was passionate about defending the rights and beliefs of other people of faith, and how important it is to work together as teams, right? I felt the very powerful feeling of being alone, right? I think many times people feel that, particularly those of minority religions or minority faiths feel alone in the face of societal views about their religion or their faith. And even now, I think many people of faith feel a little bit alone. And so my topic today is to speak about building teams and working together collaboratively to defend and advance religious freedom. This is where we're going to get the greatest work accomplished. Now, I can tell you, I walked out of that courtroom that day and I was energized and felt like I'm going to do this. I'm going to go after this. And I think sometimes we have this feeling that we're looking to be a sort of like Captain America, right? That I'm going to take this charge and I'm going to go into battle and I'm going to single-handedly win this deal. right? Or alternatively, we are looking not just for a dramatic effort, but a dramatic event, like Captain Moroni in the Book of Mormon, who took his cloak off, wrote the title of liberty, and planted it in every place he went. Sometimes I think we are looking for those dramatic events, those dramatic efforts. And yet that's not necessarily how the great work of defending religious liberty or freedom is going to be accomplished. It is going to be largely accomplished in teams, working together with others, especially of other faiths. The great coach of the Green Bay Packers, Vince Lombardi, said of teamwork this: individual commitment to a group effort, that is what makes a team work, a company work, a society work, a civilization work. Now, one of the great teams ever assembled was depicted in a 1980s sitcom. And I thought maybe you could help guess what this theme song goes to. Does anybody know that one? The A-Team, right? This great 1980s sitcom that only lasted for about four seasons, but it was a great one. In fact, they did a study, what sitcom from the 80s do people most want to bring back? And this was the number one vote getter, the A-Team, right? Here is the original A-Team. Once we get out of here, everyone here is going to be a part of the A-Team, right? But for right now, this is the original A-Team, this four. And I would give you, if I had something to throw out, I would say, can anybody name all four members of the A-Team? Okay, that would be amazing. Everybody, you probably know, well, we're going to cover them and what sort of they bring to the team, if you will, in just a little bit. But the A-Team is this sort of soldiers of fortune who are defending, not religious freedom, but defending the defenseless, if you will. They're standing up for the right principles. They are, there's a little murky past for them. They are a special operations group. But collectively, and we'll see in just a little bit, collectively they bring together different talents and abilities, capacities that help the team really succeed, right? And it's because of those differences, those different talents, capacities, abilities, that make them a truly great team, the A-Team. Okay, so if we are looking at what an A-Team for religious freedom would be, what do you think it would include? It might include, for example, somebody who, I've got just a picture of somebody who knows books, research, understands things, knows the law, if you will. We spent a lot of time in this conference today listening to people who are really knowledgeable about the law, right? Who can recite cases and recite principles and explain them in ways that are powerful and moving, right? So we need people who are like that, people who can teach, who can educate, who know, who research, who understand the principles. We need people of faith, right? It doesn't have to be people that are ministers or pastors, but people that are committed. And certainly in my experience, I've seen many who are pastors who are serving in leadership roles in their churches and their faiths. And certainly that having that aspect is very important as part of a team for religious freedom. Then, of course, we've got this somebody who knows the legislative or the democratic governmental process, right? I've got a little picture here of, what is that? Schoolhouse Rock, right? Schoolhouse Rock, how do you pass a bill? Now this last year, I had a chance to work with an organization I'm gonna talk about in a little bit, the First Amendment Partnership in Missouri and Kansas. And they work on a lot of different issues related to religious freedom, families and so forth. And I got to see firsthand the really intricate and difficult work it is to get a bill proposed and potentially passed. It's no small thing, right? It takes a lot of effort, a lot of coordinated effort. And even after all the work that they had done, they had engaged a law professor who knew about religious freedom. This is Professor Esbeck at the University of Missouri. They had engaged legislative people, legislators. They engaged lobbyists, they engaged all kinds of people. And even with all that, and with a governor and a legislature that was generally in favor of the principles that we're talking about and the laws that they were talking about, even then, they didn't get it passed. What they were working on was some legislation related to campuses and freedom of religion and expression of religion on campuses. And they still didn't get it done this session, but I anticipate they will, again, resubmit it for the next session and hope to get it accomplished. And then it's hard to ignore the importance of somebody who has the resources or people who have the resources that can contribute to a successful campaign to protect or advance religious freedom. This can come in a variety of different ways, and it doesn't have to be one person with lots of money, but certainly somebody or somebodies who have resources to be able to advance that work. So these are just some ideas of what would a religious freedom A-team look like. Now, let's go back to our original A-team, right? Does anybody remember the name of this? Hannibal Smith, Colonel John Hannibal Smith. Excellent job. Okay, and what was Colonel Hannibal Smith's role in the A-team? What was his, you had to sort of characterize what his responsibility was as part of the team. Anybody know? He was the brains of the outfit, right? He was the planner, somebody said he was the planner. He was sort of the organizer, right? The leader behind the team. You know, sort of the master strategist. You know, he put together the plan. Sometimes with those plans, and it's up there, sometimes those plans were a little unorthodox, right? About how they got carried out, how they came about. But he certainly was always creative about it, right? Unique in his planning. Every team is going to require persons who are organizers, who are leaders in that sense, who will be able to gather people and gather resources like that, that can organize a team and move it forward, right? One of the most important things I think we can do as a team or individuals is to continually answer this question, why? Why? It's a simple question. Why would you do it? Why would you spend your time working on this issue? Why is this important to you? And a leader needs to be able to do that, needs to be able to inspire that. So Colonel Hannibal Smith was that leader for the A-team. He brought that important resource. Now, he may not have been good at some other things, right? Interpersonal relationships, different things like that. No. But that was his role. Okay. It's a little dark. You can't see it that well. Anybody know this one's name? Face Man, right, exactly. Good job. Lieutenant Templeton Peck, also called Face or Face Man, right? And his role, too many previews there. What was his role? What was Face Man's role in the A-team? Anybody remember what he did? Yeah. He was like a schmoozer in the... He conned people. Now, I'm not advocating conning here. But yeah, he was kind of the people person, right? He was a schmoozer. He was the one, you know, that worked with people. He understood people. He sometimes conned, but he certainly persuaded people to give them resources and materials and things like that. That was his role. His role wasn't to be the strategist or the organizational brain behind it all, but his was the role of trying to bring people together and trying to get the resources that they need. And there is great value in having somebody that knows how to work with people, and some would say know how to work people, right? To get them to contribute, to get them to be inspired to be a part of it, right? So it is important to have somebody with this kind of role. He was the face of the operation, right? And there is value that to a face of the operation as well. Okay, the last one I will address, and then I'll ask you a quiz on the one we're missing. This is, anybody remember his name? Yes, that's his B.A., that's right. Sergeant Bosco B.A. Baracus, right. Also, Mr. T., right? And, of course, he was the money man. Look at all that gold. No, his role was to be kind of the muscle behind the project, right? He was the worker. He was the one that got things done, right? When something needed to be fixed, he was the one fixing it. When he needed to put together an airplane or a truck or build a truck out of spare parts, he was the one that did it, right? You might call him sort of the grassroots kind of person, getting the work done. He was certainly no nonsense. And we've got lots of great quotes from him that he repeats over and over again in that series. But he was the worker, did all kinds of things for them. Okay, who else? Who are we missing? We're missing Captain Murdoch, Mad Murdoch, right? He was the one that they broke out of the sane asylum every time they wanted to go on some adventure, right? Actually, it was the VA hospital. I think it was the VA hospital. But he called Mad Murdoch. So he's the one we're missing. he was the, you know, technical, and he did all that technical work for them. Okay. So now I'm going to ask a question for a little participation from the audience. And this is to you individually. If you think of yourself as being a part of a team for religious freedom, what talents and gifts or abilities, resources, or whatever it may be, do you have that you can contribute to a team for religious freedom? So I'm going to start, since David has participated many times, I'm going to start up from him. So what do you think? What kind of talents could you bring to a team for religious freedom? We're going to get a microphone. Oh, he's exempted. So he's exempted. He's already participated two or three times. It's good. Love it.
So I'm a high school teacher. I spend a lot of time like in the shower, walking down the street, thinking about how I can present ideas in new ways. That whenever I'm talking about ideas like this, that's how I tend to approach conversations, is trying to bring up new ways for people to see things.
Great. Thoughtful about how you come up with new ways. And I think the role of a teacher, an educator, is important. As part of a team, if we're going to talk about a team for religious freedom, somebody who can go out and express it and teach it to all levels, right? Whether it's children, whether it's single adults or youth, whether it's adults, being able to teach those principles is important. So an educator, excellent. Let's come up here. What can you contribute? And there is, by the way, the answer cannot be nothing.
So trans-organizational collaboration.
Did you say trans-organizational collaboration?
Trans-organizational, yeah. So
wow.
Helping people. From
that's like $10 word right there.
Yeah. That's sort of my area of expertise. I'm a political strategist and grassroots organizer. So
oh my gosh.
That's why I'm here today.
Wow, we got the right person right here. This is critical. Somebody who can bring together people of diverse interests and, you know, lots of different things towards a common good, towards a common cause. Right? Grassroots organizer. Excellent. Fantastic. Thank you so very much. That's a great talent. We'll just do a couple more.
I'm also an attorney, but I was thinking outside of sort of my
profession. And you can never have enough attorneys, by the way.
Right.
Can we all agree on that?
I've heard some jokes okay. To the contrary. But in addition to being sort of a persuader, I really like to recognize sort of the human capital that we have and try to put people together with other people. I like connecting people to resources in that way.
Excellent. You know, one of the things that is so important in terms of building a team is having people that recognize others and have connections with others and bringing them in. You know, being a connector is an important one. You'll see it on my list here in just a minute. Yes.
I'm the freedom theoretician and scholar who understands the relationship of religious freedom and other freedoms in their interconnections.
Excellent. So somebody who knows, who has the research and the understanding of the principles behind it. Great. That's great. Last one.
I put together the agendas and then send out the action items that everyone's agreed to.
Yes. That is awesome. We need lots of those people, by the way. And that's good. So, okay. There's lots of roles to be played in putting together a team like this. And I've listed several of them, some of them which you've certainly already touched on, and organizers, educators, people who can teach, people who can reach out and explain or express these principles. Grassroots, man, you guys are all over this. Grassroots workers and organizers, people who are social media specialists. I mean, increasingly, the social media is an important, really critical part of getting this word out, getting this communication out. Writers, researchers, and observers. What's the importance of an observer? What is that? You want to Tell us what you think the importance of an observer is.
Well, an observer can give you feedback as to how you're doing and what you're not doing. That's often helpful.
Yeah, very good. You know, a lot of times, things are happening in local boards or communities that if you don't have somebody out there that knows what's going on, they're seeing it, it almost feels like it's happening behind closed doors, right? Because you're not observing it. You don't see it. So you have to have people that are observing. Really, almost everybody has to be an observer in that sense. Okay, money and fundraising is people who can bring in those resources that are quite often needed to accomplish some of this work. Connector, we've already talked about that. And then volunteers, just people who will participate. Okay, now I need to tell you a little story before I do the next slide. And it relates to this team effort and the importance of who that team stands up for. So another case that I handled as when I worked for the Attorney General is a case that involved funeral protesting. And in Missouri, in Kansas, we have an organization. Has anybody ever heard of the Westboro Baptist Church?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so you've heard of the Westboro Baptist Church.
Your neighborhood, huh?
What's that?
Your neighborhood?
Yeah, that's in our neck of the woods, right. So this is an organization, church, Baptist Church, that goes out and pickets different individuals, organizations, events, different things like that, to draw interest to their cause. And really, their cause is largely one-fold, but there's several permutations of it. Their cause is they're against homosexuality, and they believe that God is cursing America for its toleration of homosexuality. And their way to address this is to go out and picket and to draw attention to it with signs and so forth. And one of the places that they like to do this is at funerals, and particularly because it garners a lot of attention, and particularly at military funerals. And so as a consequence, I can't remember what year it was, I think it was in 2002, the state of Missouri passed a law that limited people's ability to protest at funerals, right? With the theory being, you know, this is their one chance to give respect to the person and the family of the deceased. And so they wanted to provide a, you know, sort of a buffer, if you will, for this. So I was asked to defend that law, and the ACLU was defending the church and the individual. And I can remember very distinctly this interchange, this experience. I was sitting down in a conference room for the deposition of the leader of the church. And I was going to ask her questions. I was asking her questions. And through the course of this deposition or interview that I had with her, she was, again, repeating many times homosexuality. She was saying, you know, how it's wrong and, you know, all of that. And talking about that extensively and talking about, she went into, you know, how they're against Jews and, you know, they're, you know, that Jews are terrible. And I mean, she was going into all kinds of stuff. And it struck me as I sat there that there she is, I'm interviewing her, and she's saying all this about homosexuals and Jews, and she said a little bit about Mormons, and, you know, they're pretty much against everyone. I actually asked her a question out of jest. I said, have you ever considered picketing your own church? And to which she said, yeah, actually, we have considered that. Anyway, so I was watching this, and I was asking these questions. She's going on about this, and it struck me as I looked at her lawyer, who was from the ACLU, who was a homosexual Jew. As she was going on and railing about homosexuals and Jews, there was her lawyer defending her very faithfully and to the best of his ability, notwithstanding the fact that she was expressing these things about something that he felt very passionately, very deeply about in his own principles. And so, anyway, it just struck me this concept of our ability to defend others. And this is an important concept, I think, in our team, you know, in building a team for religious freedom. Understanding the power that comes from defending somebody else, the credibility that comes from defending somebody else's right to believe, and to exercise those beliefs. Let me go back. How many of you have been to the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C.? Excellent. Lots of people. Okay. So as I was there a few years ago, and I believe it as you walk out, but it's certainly in the museum somewhere, there is this remarkable quote, and I'm going to read it to you. It relates to this standing up for someone else. It says, "First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." Those are the words of a German pastor by the name of Martin Niemöller. And they are inscribed in that museum. And I think they stand for an important and powerful principle, that the principle of standing up for other people and their faith and their right to believe deeply their beliefs and hold deeply their beliefs, excuse me. So I don't believe that Martin Niemöller hated or disliked these other groups. I think probably he just felt somebody else would do it, or that they would stand up for themselves, which proved not really effective. Which gets to my point of teams and working together with others, which is a principle that we have heard over and over again in this conference, working together to defend one another. Joseph Smith also expressed this same sentiment, and a quote I'm sure many of you have read or seen before as well. "If it has been demonstrated that I have been willing to die for a Mormon, I am bold to declare before heaven that I am just as ready to die in defending the rights of a Presbyterian, a Baptist, or a good man or woman of any other denomination. For the same principle which would trample upon the rights of the Latter-day Saints would trample upon the rights of the Roman Catholics or any other denomination who may be unpopular and too weak to defend themselves." This powerful principle of defending others can be manifest and will be manifest in many of our communities. In Kansas City, Missouri, where I'm from, we have certainly vulnerable populations. One of those populations I've had a chance to be involved with as part of my efforts in religious freedom and reaching out and interfaith efforts. It's called the Dialogue Institute of the Southwest, but in Kansas City. And it's an organization, Muslim organization, that is, they're continually trying to reach out and to build friendships. They're not even trying to establish freedom of religion. They're not speaking about that. They're just trying to reach out and make friends, right? And so I've had the chance to have lunch and breakfast and different interactions with them. And I can tell you, in the last few years, there are times where you can sense the tension in them because of what's going on in the world, because of what's going on in the United States. And you can feel that vulnerability that they have. And it's been a great experience for me to see and to work with and develop those friendships. That's one of the great things that we can accomplish with interfaith efforts, is to know other people, to have friends, because an attack on one faith is really an attack on all faiths, right? That's the principle I think it's worth worth remembering. All right. Helen Keller spoke some very simple but effective words to express the importance of teams. "Alone we can do so little, but together we can do so much." And I want to go through a list of different organizations that I have been involved in that involve religious freedom or religious liberty. Now, I came in thinking a few weeks ago, as I was preparing this, I would do a comprehensive list of all organizations that are involved in religious freedom, religious liberty issues. After I got to about 50 or 60, I decided it was not going to be a very effective method of doing this, because there are lots and lots of organizations that are involved in religious liberty. Even in Missouri, and even in just ones that I have been involved in, there are several. And I'm going to take a little time just to describe a few of them and get some comments from you as well. So the first one was the J. Reuben Clark Law Society. How many are lawyers here? Okay, so a fair number. So those that are lawyers can be a part of the J. Reuben Clark Law Society. I have been a part of it for many, many years. It has been a great opportunity for me to associate with others, to be taught principles of religious freedom, to see those principles in action in many places, and to be in common cause with an effort to move this work forward. For example, in Kansas City, our chapter has worked on the education piece of religious freedom. Every year we hold, in connection with our local university there, our local law school there in Kansas City, a CLE on religious freedom in Missouri. And in that, we invite people to come speak and present. And it's been a great opportunity to educate, right, on religious freedom. The Law Society has also had the opportunity to help organize a subgroup of the Kansas Bar Association on religious freedom issues. And so the Law Society in Kansas City that I'm involved with has taken efforts to be involved in and promote religious freedom. And I have traveled in places in the world where the Law Society has been integral in terms of moving this work forward in different countries and certainly throughout the United States. So that's one. And lawyers of faith can be a part of it. I don't have them listed up here, but I've also had the opportunity to work with the Catholic Lawyers Association in Missouri, another organization committed to that. Okay. We're here, of course, at the BYU Law School International Center for Law and Religion, which has a tremendous influence throughout the world in terms of educating, in terms of gathering, in terms of collaboration, policy making, and some of those things. So this is part of the reason why we're here, and they can certainly use many people as part of their team. Alliance Defending Freedom. So in my effort to defend Missouri's Constitution with respect to marriage, I had a lot of assistance from Alliance Defending Freedom, from their lawyers, who had a tremendous amount of experience and knowledge about how to go about defending these types of cases. And they reached out to me, and I talked to them. I got information. I got assistance from them. And they cover lots of religious freedom areas. So it's a great organization that I've had a role in as well. The third one, or I guess it's the fourth one, is something to Missouri. Again, I'm focusing in on the ones that I've been involved in, the Missouri Catholic Conference. This organization seeks to continue to advance and influence legislation. They try to, of course, they're representing the bishops in the state of Missouri. And they're trying to advance legislation, policy, all those things that support their faith, their religious beliefs, and their practice of that religion. And so I've had an opportunity. Can any guess on how I first contacted them? What do you do to reach out to another organization like that? I called the general counsel and said, "Hey, would you like to go to lunch?" He said, "Yes." And I've been to lunch with him like 15 times since then. I went just a couple of weeks ago and had lunch with him. And we talked about the issues and what we could do as a faith group to help what they're doing in their efforts to protect and advance religious freedom. Another one is, I mentioned a little earlier, First Amendment Partnership, Faiths United for Religious Freedom. They do a lot of work in Missouri, Kansas. They're the ones that I worked with somewhat in terms of their efforts to promote a religious freedom effort through legislation, and they were looking for ground grassroots type of work in their efforts as well. So, and the last one I already mentioned was the Dialogue Institute for Kansas City. So there are lots of organizations out there that that you can be a part of your as a lawyer, as a non-lawyer, that while maybe there's a whole different set of those organizations in Utah, Arizona, Washington, California, wherever you may be from, there are organizations out there. Now, if you'll remember back to that first slide I showed you about that sort of overriding desire to be Captain America or to take it, you know, and individually, solely go after this work, I would encourage you, and this is the theme of my presentation today, work together with other people. Find out who they are. They are often have already developed the materials. They may have a toolkit already of an issue that is important to you. Just actually, it's very funny. In this last session, somebody asked a question about, this is what is important to me as a stay-at-home mom who sees some of these issues going on in education. What can I do? Or who would I reach out to? I'm going to fall off the edge here. He's on the edge. And I expressed to her, look, there's organizations out there that do this, right? Funny thing, that organization was in the room, right? And a woman who said, this is exactly what we do. And raise her hand, this is exactly what we do. We have a toolkit that we share with people. We have strategy, we have an organization that you can be a part of, right? They're out there. They're out there. You don't have to create it on your own. Certainly, you want to research, and this is just a very thumbnail of what is out there, even in the state of Missouri. I haven't even listed, there's a Missouri Family Council, there's lots of different organizations that I'm aware of in Missouri that work on this issue. you don't have to create it out of whole cloth for yourself. So, the other another important principle I wanted to get across in my presentation today is the importance of putting yourself in positions of influence. In order to accomplish work, we have to be either connected or have our ability to influence others. So what my question I want to ask as we continue, I don't know where the mic is, but as we continue up the rows, what are positions of influence that would be important for religious freedom to try to advance this work? What kind of positions would that mean? You've got the microphone. Give us a good word. What kind of think about this. What kind of organization or individual position would be a position of influence that would be important for religious freedom?
Well, I'm just learning. But good. In my own neighborhood, I work with the young women, and I have for years and years, and I already have an arsenal of information I want to go back and share with them about what they can do in their own high schools to support religious freedom. And I think our youth are empowered. They just don't know what to say, or they don't know what they can say and do. And so I think that would be I already have the position, and I just need to use it for good.
You do. You have a position of influence, a position of as a youth leader, somebody who has interaction with youth. These are principles that you can teach, that you can express, you know, certainly within a faith group of youth. That's a position of influence. There are so many people who, like Martin Niemöller, probably are not thinking beyond just themselves, right, or what they're facing, right? Not thinking about others or the challenges or the threats to religious freedom or faith. Okay, hand it up. Yo, well, we got volunteers, so we'll take volunteers too.
I belong to a Rotary Club in my community.
Excellent.
With a lot of business leaders in the community, and so that would be one place to share.
I couldn't agree with you more. Community organizations, Rotary, Lions Club is not as prevalent as it used to be, but lots of those types of organizations. Now, how many of you have been, stopping on that point for just a minute, how many of you are or have been on a community board? Like with some organization, it could be on anything. It doesn't even have to be about religious freedom. How many have been on that? Okay, that's great. I mean, even just being a person of faith on a community board or a commission or something like that, If you go to your state's website, in the governor's website, you will probably find that there are probably over 100 different kinds of commissions or boards, something like that, that you can be a part of. Okay, great. Let's take down here.
Running for public office.
Running for public.
It's given me more chances to participate in debates and even speak on statewide television on issues of freedom.
Yeah, people that are in public office serving are people of position of influence. Yes? Yeah, we'll go up there, up to the top.
Something we don't think about is volunteer work. And I've found that where I've ended up with the greatest influence in my community is I found problems that needed to be solved. We do have in Utah an increase in youth suicides. I mean, a shockingly high increase. And I just saw that need and started reaching out and letting people know that I was interested and helped form a commission. And right now I'm part of a group that just got started a few months ago of Mormon Women for Ethical Government, where we just looked around and said, there's needs there, and we started saying, okay, what can we do? And I think a lot of times we think we have to join some other organization when we can just look around at what the community needs, and that's led to all kinds of other things. If nothing else, it networks you with other people, and you find other people that are interested in making a difference in their community.
Yeah, and you've just given my entire presentation in two sentences, which is, we have around us so many organizations. We don't have to create them out of whole cloth. There are so many organizations that are already there that we can be a part of. And to be a person of influence is merely to step out and be a part of the community. It doesn't matter where you may be. It may be running for office. It may be a volunteer. It may be an educator. It may be a youth leader. All of those. But what it does require is that we get out and do it, right? We can't really be a person of influence or be in a position of influence in the comforts of our own home, right?
Except for social media.
Except for social media. I should qualify it. We can't be a truly effective or as effective at, you know, any rate. You get the idea, right? It doesn't really work as well in the comforts of our own home, right? We have to get out and do things, right? One of my goals that I pursue is every week I go out to lunch or breakfast with somebody different. Somebody in the community, somebody that I can build a relationship with, right? It's just so I have a connection, so I have a relationship. And it's hard to do, right? But it can be done, and that's how we do that. Okay, now, before I end, and I open it up for just for a few minutes of questions, I have to bring in a little bit of a Missouri flavor. So if you'll bear with me for just a moment, I'm gonna bring in some Missouri flavor. A couple of years ago, I had somebody visiting Liberty, where I live, Liberty, Missouri, and I wanted to do something special for them, so I kind of looked up in church history what happened in church history when they were going to be there. Turns out, 175 years before, something important happened involving this person, and I've already shown you the name. Who is that?
Alexander Donovan.
I gave you the name before you... Alexander W. Donovan. It was the 175th anniversary of that day of a very famous event that took place in the life of the Prophet Joseph Smith and Alexander Donovan. Let me describe the scenario. In 1838, the Missouri militia was sent to put down the Mormon, you know, sort of rebellion, if you will, in northern Missouri, north central Missouri. They went and Joseph Smith, the president of the church, and some of his colleagues were under the flag of a truce, went out, and it turns out they were being turned over to the militia. They didn't realize that, but that's how it turned out. The General Lucas of the militia, held a court martial. So what's wrong with that? Anybody know what's wrong with that?
They weren't military.
But, you know, small details. They needed a lawyer. So held a court martial and sentenced Joseph and his colleagues to death. and said to Alexander Donovan to that he was to take them to the city square and in the morning shoot them and kill them. Of course, Alexander Donovan did not, and anybody know what he said? It's cold-blooded murder. And if you carry out this order, I will hold you responsible before an earthly tribunal, so help me God. Right. And powerful. We actually stood in the place where that happened 175 years before and played out that little scenario. It was a lot of fun for me. Why do I raise Alexander Donovan? Because I think he stands for the concepts that I'm trying to express today. Stands for the concept that defending somebody else's religious freedom is powerful. Working together as a team is powerful to accomplish this. He was a member of the Disciples of Christ Church. Yet, he and his partner, David Rice Acheson, defended the Prophet Joseph Smith and the LDS Church for many years, even though they were not of his faith. He helped found William Jewell College, which is a Baptist college, right? These Disciples of Christ, and he helped to found a Baptist college. He has a history in education, military. He led the longest march in American military history to the war with Mexico. He was a legislator. He helped to create a county in Missouri for the settlement of the Mormons. And a statesman. He also helped to draft the New Mexico Bill of Rights, believe it or not, while he was in New Mexico after that march to the Mexican War. So he did all kinds of things, not for himself, but for others, to protect religious freedom, right? He had a tremendous influence. I've tried to, I've got maybe just 7 or 8 minutes left. I've tried to express some principles about religious freedom, and particularly developing a team for religious freedom. Now, think back to the A team, sort of where I began with this deal, right? Each one of them had different talents, skill sets, abilities, and responsibilities. Together, they made the A team, right? Synonymous with some great, synonymous with a team that can accomplish great things, right? If we're going to accomplish things, it's not going to be on our own, right, or individually. It's going to be working with others, and it's probably going to be working with others, others of different faiths, right? It's not going to be just my faith or your faith or other faith. It's going to be together. I've been a part of, I didn't list it, but I've been a part of the Interfaith Council in Kansas City. We've got people of all faiths, and yet they are all committed to the principle of religious freedom. In slightly different variations, it is true, but they're committed to that principle, and there's much that we can do together. I think it's worth knowing, or at least it's worth for me to express my view that it is a little less about the end result that is accomplished. It is much more about the fight and struggle to get there, right? About what we become as we work towards this effort. We certainly hope that we have broad-based religious protection and freedom, but it is our struggle to obtain it. It is our work and fight to defend it that is almost, if not more important than the end result, right? This is why I think it's so important for more and more people to not only be aware of, but involved in the effort to protect religious freedom. We like many, probably go about our daily lives like maybe Martin Niemöller. It's probably not quite as dramatic as that, but not realizing the impacts that are happening to people of faith. We need more people to be engaged in this. And in this, I mean, working together as teams. Now, how do you go about doing that? It's as simple as some of the things that we've heard here today. Reaching out to organizations that you know exist. Reaching out to other people that you know are interested. and asking, what can I do? How can I do it? What can I do to be of assistance, right? My challenge to you today is to go from this conference, not just from my talk or my presentation, to go from this conference committed to doing something, reaching out, becoming a person of influence, and not only becoming educated, but starting that process. Don't do it on your own in the sense of you're creating your own organization. Of course, if there's no one else out there doing it, you've looked, you've tried, maybe you have to. But I would suggest to you, there are lots and lots of organizations, individuals, groups that are out there. Build that team. Be a part of that team. Bring your own talents and gifts that you have, whether they are, you know, organizing grassroots, or whether it's educating, whether it's your ability to connect with other people. You have the talents. You have the gifts to do it. And we must do it for our own good and for our children, our grandchildren that will follow after us. Now, I'm committed to it because I have had experiences over and over again of the importance of it. I lived in different countries, and I have seen what it is to be without those freedoms we enjoy. I've seen what it's been what it is to be without grocery stores. So a lot of things I've learned from those experiences, but certainly being without religious freedom is a great loss. So with that, I want to open up. I have just five or so minutes. Do you have any questions for me about, not really anything, but certainly about how do we build teams for religious freedom? We have the, anybody? Okay, yes.
This is more about you being special.
About me being special?
Yes, because it seems to me
this will be a short question.
You're a little bit unusual in that you are an ecclesiastical leader and a public servant.
True.
Right, and I'm actually wondering if that has in any way constrained the kinds of outreach in which you can engage. Or if there's something that would be a little bit different for someone who is neither an ecclesiastical leader nor a public servant, that would either be constraining or liberating in terms of the kinds of team building they can participate in.
It is a little bit, I will confess, I have some constraints. So I don't get involved in legislation. You know, that First Amendment partnership group who I have a relationship with and I go to lunch with and we talk and I try to help in ways that I can, but I don't get involved in the legislative process because as general counsel of the Supreme Court of Missouri, I have to be careful about the things that I do that might affect the courts and different things like that. So I'm careful about that, but I don't feel any restraint at all in terms of building those connections, reaching out. There is much to be said about being friends, right? Having friends, knowing people that will support you. Even if I'm not going to be there testifying in a legislative session or a committee about their proposed bill, but there's much that I can do. So I think that's a lesson I would say that I have learned, and that is even within the roles that I have and in the context and the limitations that sometimes I have, there is still much that I can do. Just because I can't do everything doesn't mean that I should, shouldn't mean that I do nothing, right? And so that's my message in response to your question. That is, certainly it would be great to have no restrictions whatsoever. I could do whatever I want. I could show up and I could espouse anything. I have to be careful what I say because I'm a spokesperson for my church, right? Well, at least within my stake. I have that responsibility. So I have to be careful about those things. But I think sometimes people think because they have some limitations that they won't do anything, or they can't do anything. And that's just not true. You have to be careful, but we should do everything we can do within that context. And there's much that I can do, building friendships, making connections, you know, and supporting in many ways, speaking, educating. I can do lots of those things. So, great question. But I think some people feel reluctant because of some of those limitations, so. Yes, John?
Can you give us some example of people you know? Thank you. Can you give us an example of people you know who have gotten involved
with other organizations and the kinds of things they've done. You've talked to us about going to lunch with people and talking with people in these organizations, but what have people done that goes beyond that? What kinds of things have they done mm-hmm. with other organizations?
Yeah, so I'll go back to that First Amendment partnership, for example. I know people that have been involved in that organization, for example, have been called upon to come and testify before a legislative body, like a committee, to testify about the importance of having religious freedom and religious organizations on campuses. So students have been asked to participate in that, and I've seen that develop, and I've seen that request. And people that, students that who think, maybe I don't have a role in this process, have been able to participate in a very significant way, where they're testifying before a legislative committee, saying, this is important to us. To be a part of a faith-based organization on campus is important to us. And this is how it's changed our lives. This Monday, I was at lunch with this the executive director, and he described a young woman who was from Korea who was not religious when she came, but she joined to be a part of a religious organization, a faith-based organization on campus, and she described in that committee how impactful that was for her life, how it changed her, and how important it was to have faith-based organizations like that. So that's one way. I mean, you can testify. I know I have friends who have done research in terms of what is the current legislation that's out there. What are the issues that the legislature is facing? So they've done research. They've researched state of Missouri and state of Kansas. What are the current bills that are being proposed and different things like that? So there's a lot of different ways to participate like that. So I hope that answers. Yes, go ahead.
One thing that came to my mind is just the, and I think a couple of our speakers have talked about it, just the value of people getting to know someone of faith mm-hmm. and knowing how much religious freedom means to them.
Yeah.
I worked in Russia, and one of the pivotal events leading to the registration of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as a legal entity in Russia was a meeting that that one of our general authorities had with a Russian official. And he presented, I'm sure very eloquently, the case for registering the church. But after he finished, the person who was with him as a translator, who was a local member of the church, just said to this official, "Would you mind if I said something personally?" And he said, "No, go ahead." And she spoke briefly, simply, but sincerely, how much it would mean to her as a Russian member of the church to have the church registered as an entity in Russia. And that was a pivotal event. The impact of this Russian person
yeah.
just speaking personally
yeah.
was more powerful on this official than the inspired and eloquent presentation of a right. general authority.
Right. Small and simple things. This is a great message to conclude on, that is, everyone in this room has something to contribute. Whether you think it or not, you've got a talent, you've got a capacity. Don't use it alone. Give it to a team. Let it be a part of something, and you'll accomplish great good. Thank you so very much.